that.
Hi, everybody. My name's Dutch and I'm an addict. And you just watched somebody live in the program. You know, after you come in here for a while and, you know, you figure out that you're, powerless over drugs and you're powerless over people, it doesn't end there. You got to go on and you got to challenge the disease and you have to realize that you're powerless over your secrets. And that's a bitch. Because if you're like me, you like secrets. You like to, like, keep a little something-something, you know what I mean? But anyhow, you just watch somebody live in a program. And Sheila, I tip my hat. That's courage. And when I was sitting up here, I was looking at the thing, and it said, you know, like, this is 2005, and I can remember the first convention that they ever had in Jersey. Nobody wanted to have a convention in Jersey. And then finally they had one, and I remember I cut my foot off with a chainsaw. May 1st, 1985. And they had me do the banquet that year. And I remember going, trying to get up on stage with crutches. I don't know if you ever tried to, like, walk up steps with crutches. It's hard. And that's what I remember about that. And, like, this has just blossomed like a flower in 22 years. Let me tell you, Jersey, I mean, besides it being my home, we're tight. Jersey's got some good fucking recovery. And I've been, and I can say that, I feel like I kind of got a little validity in saying that because I've been to over 1,000 conventions. I've been all over the world. And ain't nothing as tight as what we have here in Jersey. People work this program here. And I know me when I came in, I didn't think that I would ever be clean. I didn't think that I could ever stop using. I got clean at 22. December 30th, 1972 was the last time that I used anything. And I'm saying that because that year, every cell in my body was trying to make it to New Year's Eve. And God said, you ain't gonna make it to New Year's Eve. And I can remember kicking, and I didn't think I could kick without being in jail. And I did for the first time in my life. And I had been in a facility, and out of that facility, we started the first NA meeting on the East Coast. And I knew that there was Narcotics Anonymous. Now, out of the first six people that went to that meeting, everybody's still clean today. And if you want a little something more than just recovery, and you want to give something back, the first 10 GSRs from the whole Philly region that were the very first 10 GSRs, that's what we called them back then, they're still clean. So this thing works if you work it. My problem was I didn't know how to work it, and I wanted to work it my way. And let me tell you what happened along the way. I didn't have a sponsor for 8 years. And I'll tell you why, because there was a couple of people that had more clean time than me, but I didn't like them. You know, and I wasn't going to have somebody that I didn't like judge me. You know, and I wasn't going to ask nobody that I didn't like for help. So anyhow, I just didn't have a sponsor. And back then, N.A. was like the Wild West anyhow. There was no rules. You showed up. If you didn't show up, we looked in the obituary columns or called the police station. And that was before literature came out that it said jails, institutions, and death. You know, we just knew that if you wasn't there, you was dying or on your way to dying. So what happened was, I've been to jail 17 times clean, thinking that I could do it my way. You can't. I thought because I was clean and doing society a service that I was above the law. Well, it wasn't like that. What happened, I went out to California and I met a guy who said he had experienced the steps. Now, back east here, we didn't talk about the steps. But we didn't talk about the steps. We didn't talk about sponsorship. There's a big difference between the fellowship and what Narcotics Anonymous is. Narcotics Anonymous is the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. Don't get it fucked up. So I knew I needed a sponsor, and I kind of respected this guy, but I was afraid that he would say no. So I said, in case he did say no, can you handle me? And then if he did say no, I could tell people, well, I never asked him to be my sponsor. You know how you keep that little bit? But anyhow, he said, you're going to work. And what happened was I got into the steps. And he says, I want you to write the steps out. And I felt like, what? I couldn't even read. And I started writing the steps out. And what had happened was, I worked the steps the way I heard other people do it, not what my experience was, because you wonder how emotionally crippled I was. If somebody asked you how I felt, I didn't know for a long time. I'm cool. But I was so emotionally crippled years after I was clean. I'm saying 10 years, a good 10 years I was in these rooms emotionally crippled. I was the sickest person I knew. But what happened was, in starting to take direction from another human being, I began to love this man. And even though he lives in California, he's my only sponsor that I've had. It works. I'm happy today, and happiness is wanting what I have, not what you have. And it took a lot of work. It took a lot of doing things that I didn't want to do. And most of the time, I did what I wanted to do and figured I'd pay the consequences. But let me tell you something. The 17th time I went away, it was like, I've had it. I got to change. And I didn't know how to change. It's easier for me to stop shooting dope than it is to change. The steps will transform you. And this is my story. I went from trying to do it my way for a long time. I just kept going to jail. It wasn't about insanity because I did it different this time. And I still went to jail. And then when I got out, I thinked up another way and I'm going to do it this way. And I still went to jail. And I remember one time I had 15 yards of concrete on the ground. I had just put it down on the ground. And the cops came and they didn't just put the handcuffs on me. They shackled me. I'm trying to walk to this fucking police car like this, and I'm thinking, I got all this money on the ground. I got to tear it up. I got to take it out. I got to do all. They wouldn't let me finish the concrete. They took me away. That was the last time that I had been in jail. And the lesson's got to be cruel to be effective for sometimes for people like us. And so what happened when I got into the steps, I did it the way my sponsor told me to do. We did the steps. It was a wee program, not just me. My way didn't work, and I wasn't just going to listen to whatever thing that he said. So I wrote the steps out. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction. Addiction is anything outside ourselves we use to make us feel good. Substitution's a big key in NA. Anybody who says that they don't substitute is lying. All these people that walk in the room and say, I'm honest, you're full of shit. We come in with baggage, and because we survived and lived, we think that that baggage is going to get us by in recovery. Well, there's enough people with enough time that are smart enough to give you enough rope to hang yourself that realize that the freedom that they talk about in here is a process of unloading. And you need to unload that baggage. But you're scared and you're full of fear and you can't let it go all at once. So that's why it's a process. So when we admit that we're powerless over our addiction and our lives had become unmanageable, well, what the fuck does that mean? Had become. That means when I try to manipulate and control people, places, things, and events to please me. And it was all about fixing me. And when I don't try to manipulate people, places, things, and events, I can practice powerlessness. And that's how I live step one today. And the longer you're clean, the program gets easier, life gets harder. Now, I'm 56 years old now. Never did I think I would ever get to be 56. Never did I think that a lot of the things that had happened to me in recovery would have happened to somebody like me. I didn't deserve it. I grew up on the wrong side of the tracks. I grew up hard. I grew up poor. I was one of the have-nots. And I can remember the last time I got out of prison before I got clean, my goal was to get on welfare. That was my goal in life. Let me tell you something. I was not one of these high-achieving, just give me my waffle and let me go. That's all. And what happens is I stayed in Narcotics Anonymous because there was no place else to go. I didn't have any place else to go. I tried going to other fellowships, but they told me I didn't belong there. They tell me to be honest, and then when I'm honest, they say, you don't belong here. Well, fuck you. I ain't coming back. And the way I look at it now, I go where I'm celebrated, not tolerated. Fuck that. So what happened is, my life in Narcotics Anonymous went through ups and downs like you wouldn't believe. But once I started to grab onto these steps, and that's all I had. You know, and the program is a program of spiritual principles. You can't see spiritual principles. Anybody ever tell you they saw spiritual principles, stay the fuck away from them. Just back the fuck up, say, yeah, okay. All right. And move. Because the program's invisible. You know, God is invisible. God is so slick, he put himself in each and every one of us. This thing, from a guy who wouldn't leave the corner. Now, I wouldn't leave the corner because I was afraid I wouldn't be able to cop no place else. Anybody ever been there? I ain't going across town. No. I ain't going Delaware. You got to be crazy. D.C., New York, I ain't going to New York. I would not leave the corner. I wasn't leaving. But what? And so from somebody like that to get to where I am today, I just can't believe it. So what happened was I got step one down. And I remember I wrote out what I thought my sponsor wanted to hear. And he said, do it again. And then I wrote down what I thought sounded good. And then I wrote down what really I thought was step one. And I can tell you this, there's a big difference between abstinence and recovery. And he with the most clean time isn't always right. And that was my gospel back then. Because I thought always the person with the most clean time, and of course I always had the most clean time, and I hung around people that had less clean time with me, so because they would think I was right, because I had a need to be right. Now you know how that works. So what happened was, when I got into these steps, my life changed. And in the beginning, it changed for the worse. Now, how can it change for the worse? Well, God thought that, even though I didn't think so, he thought that my ex-wife should be out of my life. And I was a stalker. Look, this is my story. I don't give a fuck what you think of me. I'm saying this for me. Now, I'll tell you how much of a stalker I was. I built a treehouse behind the house, told all the neighbors it was for the kids, right? I'm up in the treehouse one night with a beach chair, a bottle of Perrier, and a box of cereal, stalking. You couldn't get me out of that fucking treehouse with a tow truck. I was alive. I felt alive. I felt good. Every cell in my body was like, find out, find out, find out, find out. I tell you, it's a funny story now, but back then, boy, it was a bitch. Every night I was planning on what time to go up into the treehouse, because I had to go to a meeting first, because God was going to, like, put a check on it, you know what I mean? And then if I go up into the treehouse too late, all the lights will be out. I ain't going to see nothing. I want to see it all. So I just didn't know how to let go. You know, you got all these motherfuckers in the program. Oh, let go. Well, you let go when the pain outweighs the pleasure is when you let go. You know, and there was people back then, they didn't have them slogans. Nobody told me that. Just let go. Well, how the hell? How do you let go? And nobody gave me an answer. So, but when the pain outweighs the pleasure, you let it go. You drop it and you move on. So what had happened was, the more I got into these steps, and step two was, it was every cell in my body had a need to be right. And I thought that insanity was just using drugs. And insanity is having to get the last word in, having the need to be right. And you know, any of you guys in a relationship have a need to be right? You know, like when you're with your woman and you raise your vibe level and you're not yelling, but you're like in that intimidation thing. You know what I mean? We have that need to be right. Or I had that need to be right. And so what happened was, being restored to sanity is a process of not reacting. Because once I start to react, I got to finish the ride. Once I start acting out, I can't stop acting out. I don't know why, because I'm a fucking addict. But once I start, I think I'm going to get something good out of it, and I ain't going to stop acting out until it's done. Whenever the fuck that is. And I don't even know when that is. Fuck, I've been on gambling binges for a year and a half. I only went for one day. I'm going to play a couple of shoes. I remember I was going to South Carolina one time. They had these fucking slot machines in the gas station. I filled my car with gas. I'm in playing slot machines. I come out, I got an eighth of a tank of gas. I left the car running. I only went to pull it a couple of times. You know, I mean, that's just the fucking way it is. I mean, for me, I mean, it's nuts. And I would do things to justify this and justify that and do this and do that. And I remember one time I was supposed to speak someplace. Oh, I know where it was. It was up in Massachusetts, and we had to go by the Indian places up there. I said, let's just stop in and play a couple of shoes. Fuck. I got there the next day. And that, you know, and that's just craziness. It's insanity. But that's me. Do you know what I mean? And what happened, the steps level you out. The steps put the saneness back in you. You know, when made a decision to turn my life and will over to the care of God as we understood him. Now, check this out, italicized, as we understood him. That's the first time in the steps that it's italicized and it's written different. And don't think that them fucking words ain't written different for a goddamn reason. As we understood him. That's the beginning of the journey. Recovery's an inside job. Steps one and step two, get you ready for it. Step three, you start the journey. And when you make a decision to turn your life and will over to the care of God, if you're like me, you're betting your life that the program of Narcotics Anonymous works. Because it's as simple as this. The decision that I made was to continue the Narcotics Anonymous way. Not anything other than that. I used to think, if I got my hair cut, is that God's will? If I fucking drive this car, is it God's will? If I have sex with this girl, was it God's will or my will? Ah, fuck, I don't know. Let's just fucking keep going. So, fuck all that head stuff. God's will for me is to continue with this process. That's simple. And when I can keep it simple, it stays sweet. You know, the moral inventory. Well, fuck, they said take stock of the shelves. Well, what the fucking shelves I got? I'm whacked. You know, I'm crazy and got papers to prove it. How many times you got to go to jail for doing the same thing before you're a nut? And that's clean. Fuck it. I don't know what I was like. I mean, I never did a year on the street from the time I was 13 till I got clean. Jail saved me. You better believe jail saved me. Like a lot of people said, I can't go to jail, or this, and I'll tell you what, I got a sad story in my life. My son got 3 years in prison. He graduated from college on a Friday. The judge said, report Tuesday. And he had to start doing 3 years. He's in a rehab now. So we're not above saving our own. And one of the hard things as a parent is to let go of that shit and let somebody else help your own, because you will go crazy. So when I started this inventory stuff, the first time I did my four step was at a racetrack, Atlantic City Racetrack. I took a newcomer with me to the racetrack. We won three races. We're sitting up there eating like big shots, right? I'm feeling bad. I'm winning, but I'm feeling bad because I got this new guy with me, and I shouldn't be taking this new guy with me. I should be taking him to a meeting, but fuck it, we're in the racetrack, we're winning. I says, oh, I feel, what am I going to do? I go in the bathroom, I take four paper towels, I got the racetrack pencil, and I'm writing down all the shit that I ever did. I filled up all the paper towels with all the shit that I ever did, and then I said, now what do I do with it? What the fuck, I can't tell him, he'll fucking leave me. So I went to this retreat, and I told this priest, and the priest gave me told me to do all this stuff, and I'd have absolution. I'm not Catholic. I don't even know what absolution would be. I don't even know what it does. But I felt good starting the process, telling somebody else my dark stuff. And at the time, that was as honest as I could be. And then through the process of working with a sponsor, I got down to what it really was about doing a four-step. And I remember it took me like 6 months. And it was 44 pages long, and it was as thorough as I could be. And I went, and I talked to my sponsor about it. And he says, this is what I want you to do first. It's admitted to God, to ourselves, another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. I want you to go into the bathroom and look in the mirror and read your four step to yourself. That was tough. That was tough. And I got to feel the person that I was. And there was no running, no hiding. I was the one that pushed that pen. I was the one talking in the mirror. And then I admitted it to my sponsor. But admitting it to a mirror, that was doing it with God. Ourselves and another human being. And I felt good after that because I gave it my best shot. If you give this program your best shot, you'll feel good. If you don't give it your best shot, you'll know. You'll know. And then we get into step six and step seven. And step six, it was like, well, I used to ask these people, what's the difference between step six and step seven? Oh, they both mean the same. Well, why would they waste two steps on meaning the same thing? And why would you humbly ask to have something gone when you don't humbly ask before? I mean, what's with that? And the only thing I can put it in my terms is step six is like a car with flat tires and step seven is trying to drive it. And that's the only way that I know how to put it in my head. And what happens is, we only get a daily reprieve on our defects. Every day I wake up, I'm defect-free till I start acting out. Every day. Just for today's a brand new day. I got my dignity. I got all my good shit every day. It's me that messes it up. And it's usually thinking I can get away with something. All the time. So what happens is, with steps six and seven, the stronger and deeper you work step six and seven, the less amends you're going to have to make. And believe me, I'm an offensive player at fucking up. And I've always had to make more amends than I did trying to work on defects. Because I used to think that if I stop this, I'm going to stop forever. I remember I quit smoking one time. 812 hours. 30 seconds at a time. I got to 812 hours and said, fuck it. Everything that I ever did, I always quit. I would start and I would quit. It ain't for me. And I come up, you know, when you start to not like something, you know the rationalization process that we go through to get to where we can justify that insane shit before we get to finally making the decision to quit? That's a lot of energy. But we do it. But that's the whole process of this whole thing. You're going to learn everything about you that you need to know. And it's not going to happen in one day. There's not a graduation thing. God's not done with me. I'm clean going on 35 years, and I got a long way to go. Long way to go. And what happens is, you know, you get to these defects, you're clean for a long time, and your shit is fucked up. And you can't go in the room and raise your hand, because then everybody that's looked up to you is going to say, oh, no, not you. You ever read in the basic text, we're all the same? We're all the same with 34 years and 34 minutes. We're all the same, like it or not. And so what happens is, when we get into to making amends, after we get, you know, working on defects just for one day, and sometimes it's like not acting out for 5 minutes at a time. When every cell in your body is saying, call that person. You know it's wrong, but you telling yourself it's going to feel right. Well, fucking feelings ain't facts. And half the time when we do connect, it's like, I shouldn't have made that call. Oh, fuck it, I'll call somebody else. But the thing is, it's a process where we learn this. We store this information. So then we go on to making amends. Make direct amends whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. It's not about cleansing your soul at somebody else's expense. That's all I'll say about that. And then what happens is we get into step 10. And we do an inventory on a daily basis. And I do mine when I know I can't sleep. If something's not right, I check it out. I'll do an inventory. And then what happens is, here we come to step 11 again, where as God as we understood him again, it's italicized. This is the end of the journey, folks. Step 3 is the beginning. Step 11 is the end. What the fuck happens in between? If you stick and stay long enough, and this isn't a maybe, it's a promise of freedom. That any addict can stop using and find a new way to live. And what happens in between step 3 and step 11 is a spiritual transformation that will blow you the fuck away. And is more powerful than anything you could have ever imagined. And what happens is, should have never done that. What happens is when we get to step 11 and we have this conscious contact with God as we understood him, I didn't know what a conscious contact was, but it's an ever-present knowing that God's in your life, and it's a very elusive thing. And it doesn't happen all the time, and if you want it, you got to work for it. And I can't do it around other people. I got to be by myself. God damn, shut the fuck up. Yeah, kill him. Dead. Pain in the ass. But what happens is that in this process, when God, as we understood him with the conscious contact, I got to be by myself. I can't be in a room full of people and get this. I can feel God with all you people, and it's a powerful thing. And believe me, it's kept me going a lot of times. I've gone to conventions and not slept from Friday till Sunday and left feeling better than any drug ever gave me. And I got to tell you, I haven't spoken at a convention in 3 years. And I did that purposely. And I'll tell you why, because I never said no to Narcotics Anonymous for 30 years. And I figured I had talked to a lot of the old timers, people with more time than me. And they said, Dutch, you need to get ready for when you're older. You need to get ready for when you're my age. See, because I got a lot of time, but I'm the young buck out of all the guys with, like, over 30 years. I'm the kid. So they're kind of like my older brothers and older sisters, and they kind of like, Dutch, you need to look out for this shit. It's coming. And I know one guy, he's got over 40 years clean. He retired from Columbia Pictures, and he told me, he says, my pension just doesn't cut it. He says, I'm like in jail. And there's nothing I can do about it. And it bothered me. And I saw other people with health issues, because the older you get, the more health issues you get. And I started going to these anti-aging things. And I started going to different things. Because the thing is with me, I like life. I like my life. I love all of you. I like all of this. I don't want it to end prematurely. And if I can do something, I'll do it. And I've done it. And I'm glad that I did do it. But it took not going to conventions for 3 years. It took not speaking. It took saying no. I built a house for my family. That shouldn't be for somebody like me. The first time I moved to Narcotics Anonymous, my possessions were this. A beach chair. I had a box. I had a velvet sheet that I put over the box when I turned it upside down, and I put a lamp on there that didn't work. They were my possessions when I got clean. And I didn't have a place to live. I put my beach chair out on the street. And I put my box next to me to make it think like I had furniture. I didn't have no fucking furniture. It was a lamp that didn't work. And there was nothing inside the box, except when you turn it upside down, it didn't go in. So I put the black velvet thing on top of it and feel like I was nice. So you know how we go. But I was good at sleeping in the back of cars till one time the people came to the car. I overslept and they got me in the back seat. And, you know, it was embarrassing. The police came and all this stuff and vagrancy stuff. What are you doing? And I just didn't have no place to go. And they said, that's no reason to sleep in their car. And I didn't have an answer, so fuck it, take me away. I don't know what the fuck to tell you. But the thing is, for me to live the way that I'm living today is beyond my wildest dream. And it can happen to anybody. If it can happen to somebody like me, I'm telling you, it can happen to anybody. I couldn't get off the corner. I couldn't stay out of jail. I couldn't stay out of jail clean. I like jail. Fuck it. You know what I mean? I got good at doing jail. You know what I mean? You fucking watch Jerry Springer twice a day. You change... trade soup for jello, you fucking talk shit all day long. I got good at pinochle, I got good at spades. Fuck it. Give me a conjugal visit once a week, I'm good, fuck it. I'm having fun here. But, I didn't know how to live outside of jail. I didn't know how to get a job. Go to work every day, wake up every day. I remember When I got clean and we were living in Philadelphia, there were six of us in this house and we were all on welfare. Nobody had a driver's license. Nobody had a car. Everybody was unemployable. I mean, that's Narcotics Anonymous in the early days. We played spades to 10,000. We wasn't going nowhere. We had no place to go. I mean, where are you going to go? You wait for the meeting at night. And when we got a meeting every night a week in Narcotics Anonymous in the city of Philadelphia, we felt we had arrived. Because we didn't have to hear, you got to go here, you got to go there. We bet our lives that Narcotics Anonymous worked, and it did. Now, let me go back to the steps, because I stopped at step 11 for a reason. The whole thing is about loving yourself. And step 12 is how we love God back. See, in step 3, God loves us unconditionally and doesn't ask us to love him back. But in step 12, after having had a spiritual awakening, we know how to love. And sometimes love is just carrying the message. But this is how we love God back, by carrying the message. And carrying the message just may be how you're living. Not what you're saying, because we're so full of shit. And let's go not to italicized words, but in the basic text, there's block words. How we live. Find it. You may say, just see if I'm lying. But it's in block form. It's how we live. That's what recovery is. It's how we live it and how we love ourselves. And you can't love yourself till you experience the steps. So if you ain't with it, get with it. It's more painful not to work these steps than it is to work the steps. And the blessings will come. I cannot begin to tell you all the blessings that have happened to me in 34 years of being clean. The things that I've been able to see and experience and go. And I'm not talking about things out, the material things. Because you know what? They can all go too. If you don't put God in this program first, let me tell you something. Your shit's gone. Your shit is gone. And I can remember one time, I was clean. I just bought a new car, but I wasn't making payments on it, but I had enough to get a car. And I thought that I had arrived, and I thought that I was all this Mr. Spiritual, and I was driving it to meetings, and I'm all hot shit, you know what I mean? And I see a fucking tow truck taking it down. I chased that fucking tow truck for 3 blocks. What are you doing? Well, you got to pay for the damn thing. You know, it's just like the first time I opened a bank account, they gave me 500 blank checks. Are they crazy? You know I got locked up for that. 500 blank checks? And a motherfucker's gonna take it? Shit. Took me 5 years to pay them checks back. I mean, you know, what are you gonna do? I mean, That's my story. But what happened is my story is this, that you can go from somebody that don't know to somebody that knows, but you can't do it by yourself. And all they say there are no must. Then why do they got it so many times in the first 103 pages? So there's some things that I had to do to get to where I am today. And like I said, I'm that addict that was any addict that stopped using, that found a new way to live, and is happy because I want what I have, not what you have. And I owe all that to this program. Coming in here and not knowing if it would work for me. Not knowing if I would be here tomorrow. Because I like dope. I didn't just like dope. Fuck it. I like getting it. I like everything about it. The getting and using and finding ways and means more. Fuck it. Fuck it. I liked it all. I just didn't like getting high. I like copping. It was exciting when you got beat. Fuck it. You had drama. It was a way of life. Fuck it. But all that today, I mean, is where I am today. And you know what? I'm content. I'm happy. I love my life. I just don't like some of it. I love my life. I go to one meeting a week. Now, I hear people say, oh, he don't go to meetings. He don't go. Well, fuck, if you ain't got it after 34 years, you ain't getting it. You ain't getting it. I go to one meeting a week, and I don't talk on purpose at that meeting because I want to hear to keep me green. And I sponsor people. I talk on the phone. I'm with addicts all the time because I look at my life like this. My life without addicts in it is like a bicycle with flat tires. When I'm talking with addicts and hanging out with addicts, my tires are full of air. And the only time I get in trouble is, look, Mom, no hands. Thanks for letting me share, Mom. I'm an addict named Dutch.